We're holding on page 138 in Nedarim, Ois Mem Gimel, beginning of Rabbi Eliezer, Perek Tshili. The subject of this parak is basically about Hataras Nedarim, about the grounds on which one Chacham, or Yochid Mumcha, or Beis Din of Three, can be Matir Neder. So it starts with a din that Rabbi Eliezer says there are certain things that you can use as a valid Pesach for a Neder, and then there are things, some of those things the Chachamim disagree with him on. One of them is, he holds that even we touched on this earlier in the Masechta, about that he holds that you can use something called Noilad. When you have something that happened completely out of left field, completely unexpected, Rabbi Eliezer says that can be used as a valid reason to be matir the neder. Chachamim disagree and say that it has to be something that's reasonably to be expected, or at least reasonably to be expected within the time frame of the neder. So the Gemara explains that where does Rabbi Eliezer, by the way, the Gemara mentions in Nazir, we'll have a piece in a few days, Bez Hashem, sometime next week probably, related to that in Nazir, where we don't have the actual specific thing about Rabbi Eliezer over there, but the Gemara points out that Rabbi Eliezer eventually changed his mind. The Chacham overwhelmed him with arguments to the contrary. Shatfu, Rabbi Eliezer is the expression the Gemara has over there. Like, they overwhelmed him with arguments and got him to agree that you don't use Nolad as a valid way to be Matir Neder. So Rabbi Eliezer says, so the Gemara says over here, where is Rabbi Eliezer learning it from? Because, like this, you have, as the Gemara is going to work out over here, Moshe had made a neder to, or shvua, whatever the case, that to Yisroel, that he's not going to leave Midian without his permission. Now, then, it's time to go back to Mitzrayim, meaning that the neder, meaning that you can now be matir neder. Now, on what grounds can be matir neder? Hashem tells him, ki mesu kolan noshim hamvakshim es nafshecha, all the people who want to kill you are dead. Now, Rabbi Eliezer says that them being dead can be considered noilad. Now, obviously, eventually everybody dies, but nevertheless, the Beis Yosef gives two explanations about it, why death would be considered noilad. One is because even though, of course, eventually it happens, not necessarily is it going to happen when you want it to, like this, that his enemies should have to die at a time when he's still alive and able to see it. And second of all, b'chlal, people don't, even though people know somewhere in the back of their head that eventually everybody dies, it's not something that usually people take into consideration when they're making plans. In other words, the idea behind why the Chachamim say you can't use Nolad to be Matir and Neder is because since it's something completely unexpected, even if he had been told at the time he made the neder, you know, this could happen, he would say, ah, come on, what's the chances of that happening? I'm making the neder anyhow. So now we can't use that as a valid Pesach. But now Rabbi Eliezer is saying that, look, Hashem is telling him all the ones who wanted to kill you are dead. So that's an example of Nolad, and we see that Hashem is telling Moshe that that's a valid reason to be Matir Neder. Now, the Chachamim counter that by saying that, no, it doesn't mean they were dead. Now, the Gemara is going to explain over here, it means who are the people who are looking to kill him is Dothan and Aviram, who mastered on him to Paray, and they weren't dead, they were poor. So they, and being poor is not considered Nolad, because it's a galgal chozeh ba'olam. Poverty and wealth is a cycle in the world. People are always, there's some people who are rich become poor, and vice versa. That's something more expectable, and that's not considered Nolad. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rav Yechon Meshum Rav Shimon Yechoy Kol Mokem Shatam Moitzir Shenemar Nitzim or Nitzavim." Every place where it says about certain people that they were Nitzim, that they were fighting, or Nitzavim, that they were standing, Einam Ela Dosan against Moshe, Einam Ela Dosan Raviram, that means Dosan Raviram. Meaning, in other words, so we have as follows: we find the word, we find them Nitzim. We find to begin with in Parshas Shmos where there were Shnei Anoshim Ivrim Nitzim, two Jews who were fighting, and Moshe tries to break up the fight. Loma Sakereacha. Then you have later on, at the end of Parshas Shmos, it says after Moshe and Aaron had come the first time to Paray, and Paray not only didn't want to listen to them, but even made the slavery harder and said that he's not giving the Jews straw anymore. So then the pasuk says that they came out and they met Moshe and Aaron nitzavim lekrosam. So we understand the word nitzavim is not referring to Moshe; it means rather these people were standing there outside the palace as Moshe and Aaron came out, and they complained to them and said, you made things worse. So the Gemara is understanding that it's the same people, Dothan and Aviram. Now, later on, you have by the Machlokes with Korach, it uses the expression, Asher Hitzu. The Pasuk says that they fought. Hitzu is from the same Shurdash as Nitzim, and it also describes them as Nitzavim, the Dothan and Aviram, Yotzu Nitzavim. So in all those places, therefore, it refers to the same pair, Dothan and Aviram. So therefore, in short, yes, they were the ones who mastered into Pare, but we see that they were alive later on as well, because here Hashem is telling him they're dead, but here we see that they're the same ones who met Moshe and Aaron outside the palace after Moshe and Aaron went the first time to Pare, and they were the same ones who are alive sometime later at the time of the Machlokas of Korach. So therefore, say the Chacham Rabbi Eliezer, you're telling me Hashem is saying Kimesu Kalan Noshim, it doesn't mean that they're dead. Elamai Kimesu Kalan Noshim. So what does Hashem mean when he says that they're dead? Omer Shlokesh Yodim Nechseim means they became poor. So therefore, so, and that's not considered Nola, because again, for people to come poor, to become poor is something quite expectable and something quite normal, and therefore, and people do take that into consideration, that so therefore, so if when he made the neder to begin with, he said it doesn't matter whether, doesn't matter whether they're poor or rich, whether they're whatever, I'm still making the neder, then fine, that's not a valid Pesach. But otherwise, you can tell him, you know, you might have thought of when you made the neder, the consideration that they might, for example, that they might become poor, and that has implications for your neder, would you have made the neder if you realized that? And he would say no. In this case, in other words, the point is that because they're poor, therefore they lost their influence with Paray. Now, therefore, when he comes back, they're not going to go rush off to Paray and say, hey, Moshe's back and he's a wanted man, because now that they're poor, Paray's not going to give them the time of day. So the Gemara explains, Tanya, we're learning a Braisa, Dalet Chashuvim Kemesim. There are actually four people who are considered as though they were dead. Oni, we have this in the first parak of our Masechta as well, there the Gemara had brought it in connection with the idea that when a person uses Shem Shamayim Levatola, a person uses Hashem's name unnecessarily, then it can cause him to become poor, which is also considered like death, as we're saying over here. So Dalet Chashuvim Kemesim, Oni, a poor person, Umetzora, a person who has Tzaras, Vesuma, a blind person, Umisha, in Leibonim, and a person who has no children. Each of them we can see in some place in a pasuk is compared to being dead. Oni dichtiv kinesu kol anoshim, we're saying about dosan and aviram, that they're dead, meaning that they're poor. Mitzora dichtiv anotihi kames, Moshe, when Miriam gets tzaras, Aaron pleads for Miriam, he says, don't let her be like someone who's dead. So we see, in other words, what he's saying is, if she has tzaras, then she's considered like she's dead. Now, this actually has implications in halacha as well, that Tosfos over here refers to the point that actually we have the same way as a mess is metame ba'oyo. You go into the same room or under the same roof as a mess, then you become tame the same way. Metzora has the same effect. If he's under the same roof as other people, then he makes them tame. But here, the Gemara is not referring so much to that halachic angle of it, but rather just the fact that he's compared in the pasuk to a dead person. Suma, a blind person. So Marsha actually mentions that point. Rashi mentions in the Chumash from Sifri this point that a mess and a Metzora are both Metame Bibiya. But over here, we're not really focusing so much on that. We're just saying, in other words, that the life of such a person is not considered really a life. There is a vort on it because each of these four people is unable to have an influence on the world around them, and in that sense, then it's considered as though they're dead. Chiddush Gaonim over here brings on the side a point also that a person has to have. First of all, a person has to have the ability to perceive the truth, and a person starts by perceiving things with his eyes, so therefore if he's blind, he's lacking that first step, so he's not able to fully perceive the world around him. He says that in fact it may not mean physical blindness only, it may also mean a blindness of his mind. The saras represents that he has really bad midas. Being poor represents what's a person's true kinyonim is a Torah and mitzvah. So being poor represents that he's lacking in those and he's lacking in having given tzedakah. So therefore in those three, then it means that he is lacking as a person. And the fourth one, not having children, chiddush gaonim brings, means in other words that it means that his lineage is not going to continue. So it's not, he himself is going to eventually die and there's not going to be any continuation of him. So in that sense, then all four of them are considered kemes. If he doesn't have children, it's not his fault, obviously, but nevertheless, the fact is, yeah. I mean, you can also have, you know, a person in that situation can do many things. He can teach Talmidim, and his Talmidim are considered like his children. He can adopt children. The Gemara says that adopt the children that a person adopts is considered like he fathered and mother, like those parents fathered and mothered them. So there are things that he can do, but here, yeah. So that's Mitzvah. Suma Dichtiv, he placed me sitting in darkness like those who are dead forever. So in other words, Maharshal says, we don't just mean, in other words, somebody who's without light, as in like his candle blew out. We mean, in other words, Pashat, that he has it's a permanent darkness, because he's always dark. He's always blind. Or Misha in Leibonim, and someone who has no children, Dichtiv Hovali Vonim, Rachel says to Yaakov, give me children, Vim Ayin, Mesa Noichi, and if not, then I'm dead. Now, Maharshal says, it doesn't mean that I'm going to die of grief, because then, what do you mean? Then it wouldn't be Mesa Noichi in the present tense, almost Noichi, I will die. So Mesar Noichi means right now, as it is, without children, I'm like dead. So therefore we see that that's considered now. So you have the question that Ran brings in the first paragraph, which we learned about over there. So why do we have to assume that Davka, Dasan, and Aviram became poor? Why don't we say that any of these other three things happen? So we learned over there, it can't be that they were Mitzoroyim for a couple of reasons, one of them being that we find them later on in the Machna, and even if they were healed by Matan Torah, they would have gotten it back later after the Chet Egel. And also that wouldn't necessarily prevent Paray from paying attention to them. We see, for example, Naaman was a general, even though he was a Mitzoroyim. Blind is, we see that later on they tell Moshe, Ha'eni Anoshim Ahim Tanakir, would you put out our eyes, even if you're going to threaten to gouge out our eyes, we're still not coming when you tell us to come during the Machlokas of Korach. So obviously their eyes were still functioning. And Misha in Lebonim, first of all, we see in the Pesukim over there by Korach, where it mentions that they had children, and second of all, even if they didn't have children, again, that wouldn't prevent Paray from paying any attention to them. So therefore, by elimination, it has to be that they were poor. So that's how it was. Even Yaakov actually points out it may also be, by the same logic, maybe when we're saying a blind person, maybe a deaf person would be included as well. The Gemara, in fact, tells us in Bava Kamma that if a person blinds somebody else, then he has to pay him Nezek Tzar and Ripui and so forth for the loss of his eyes. But if he makes him deaf, the Gemara says he has to pay the entire value of the person, because when he's deaf, then he's not suitable for any kind of work. A person, he might be hired for a job, he might be sold as a slave or whatever, his master is not going to get any useful work out of him because he can't hear anything. So therefore, arguably, by the same token over here, when we say blind, it means it would include deaf as well. Anyway, so the Chachamim are saying to Rabbi Eliezer, you're trying to prove then from that story of Moshe's Shavua that you were able to be Matir, a Neder, a Shavua on the basis of Noilad. No, because in fact it's not Noilad, because Dasan and Aviram didn't die, they just became poor, and being poor is not considered Noilad. So further on this topic, as far as Hatar, as far as rules of Hataras Nedarim, the Gemara says Tanya, we learn in Braisa, Hamudu Hanam Chaveroi, when a person has made a neder not to have Hanam from somebody else, Ein Matirin Loi Ela B'Fonav. You can be Matir that neder only in his presence. Now the Ran brings, and in some detail over here, two reasons behind that. One is, in this particular case, we're talking about Mudra Anor Machaber. He made a neder not to have Anor from somebody else, which usually is because they're not getting along. But you can have, more generally, when a person makes a neder, there might be, he's making a neder because, for example, the other person did him a favor, and now, therefore, he's making a neder about doing something for the other person. So, first of all, there's the matter of Mipnei Busha. You don't want to have, so like this, for example, Reuben did a favor for Shimon. In return, Shimon is making a neder or shavua that he'll do something for Reuven. We don't want then that Shimon can now go and have his neder canceled unilaterally without Reuven knowing about it, because it should be Mipnei Busha. He should be embarrassed to. He only made this neder because Reuven did something nice for him. How could he know and now go and be matur without Reuven's knowledge? He should be embarrassed to do that. So like this, if he has to do it with Reuven's knowledge, then it means he's going to be embarrassed to do that, because then how can I be so ungrateful to Reuven? The other reason is Mipnei Hashad, because there's going to be suspicion. Reuven is afterwards going to see that Shimon is not following the neder. He's allowing him to have Anah from his Nechasim, or he's doing whatever, and he's going to think that Shimon is violating the neder, not realizing that he was Matur Neder. And the Ran discusses a couple of different Nakaminas in it, in the Halacha, and so forth. On top of that, also, you have a Machlokas Rishonim on the point that we're talking about over here, the whole point that we're going to talk about over here. First of all, does it Taka only apply when the other person did him a favor, or does it apply more generally? So does it only apply when Reuven had done a favor for Shimon, and therefore in return Shimon is making a neder or shvur to do something nice for Reuven, but otherwise not? Or does it apply across the board when Shimon made the neder regarding Reuven, and therefore Reuven has to know about it? That's the first thing. And the second thing is machlokas, whether when we say that he has to do b'fonav, does it literally mean in his presence, or does it just mean that Reuven has to know about it? There's a lot of discussion about all these details in Shulchan Aruch and the relevant Siman and Hilchos Nedarim and in various Rishonim and Acharonim. Anyway, so Hamuda Hanor Mechaveiro. So again, he made a neder not to have Hanor from somebody else, or any kind of neder. Ein Maturin Loi Ela B'Fanav. You can be Matur neder only in his presence. My Menahani Mili. Where do we know that from? Amar Rav Nachman Mili. Tamer Rav Yechanan. So Rav Nachman says, or some say Rav Yechanan says, Dichtiv again with Moshe's Shrua to Yisrael. Vayomer Hashem Moshe B'Midyan V'Gomer. Hashem says to Moshe in Midyan, go and return to Mitzrayim. Now, in the simple sense, it means exactly that. While Moshe was in Midyan, Hashem tells him to go back to Mitzrayim. The question is, why do we need to be told that? We already know he's in Midyan. So it means Omalai tells him the Midyan Nadauta, you made a neder or shvua in Midyan to Yisrael that you're not going to leave Midyan without his permission. Leich b'hatur nidrucha b'Midyan, you therefore have to go and be matur neder in Midyan. So that's where we learn. In other words, so again, one way of looking at it is that Moshe had made the Shavua because Yisrael had done him a favor. He allowed him to stay by him. He married off his daughter Tzipora to him. The other way of looking at it, it doesn't really matter that he had done him favors. It's more just the fact that Moshe had taken the Shavua not to leave Midian without Yisrael's permission, and therefore he's bound to keep it and to not be Matur Neder without Yisrael knowing about it. Mephoshim actually point out that in the previous pasuk, Yisrael already tells him Leich L'Shalom. Moshe tells Yisrael that after Hashem has spoken to Moshe for a week at the snare, so the pasuk says Moshe came and returned to his father-in-law Yisrael, which is one of Yisrael's seven names, and he tells him, I want to go back and see my brothers in Mitzrayim, see my fellow Jews in Mitzrayim, and see how they're faring. And Yisrael tells him Leich L'Shalom, and only after that do we have this next pasuk that Hashem tells him in Midian, go return to Mitzrayim. So it seems out of order. So there is a possibility, I think they have, and Ezra says that maybe in fact the Pesukim are out of order, that first Hashem tells Moshe to go back to Mitzrayim, and then Moshe says to Yisrael, let me go back. But another way of looking at it, a couple of Mephoshim over here talk about, the Rif talks about it, and Eitz Yosef talks about it, that there may be a distinction. There was Moshe's Shavua that he himself wouldn't leave Midian. So fine, not necessarily does he need Yisrael to be Matur, does he need Yisrael's permission to be Matur, because it affects only him himself. But then there's also part of the Shavua is that he's not going to take his wife and children and leave Midian without Yisrael's permission. For that he needs, so in other words, when he first tells Yisrael, I want to go, and then go to Mitzrayim, and Yisrael tells him Leich L'Shalom, then fine, that's all he needs. He has permission, and that's that. But then Hashem tells him, you need to also take along your wife and children, and for that you need Yisrael to agree that you're going to be Matur Neder because you made the Neder to him. And again, according to the opinion that it's whether we follow the opinion that it's Dafka when he did him a favor or not. Either way, he has to inform Yisrael before he's Matur the Neder. So. How do we know that he made a shvur in the first place? Dichtiv vayoyel Moshe l'shavas ha'seish. The pasuk says that Moshe vayoyel to stay with the man. Now the simple meaning of vayoyel means he wanted to, he agreed to. But the Gemara's understanding, vein ola el shvur. The word vayoyel, the shodash of the word ola, the shodash of the word vayoyel refers to a shvur. So vayoyel Moshe l'shavas ha'seish would mean that Moshe swore to stay with the man. Now, where do we get that from? So Maharsha refers over here to what the Mizrahi says on the Pasuk, that since the Pasuk then continues, that Yisrael married off his daughter Tzipora to Moshe, so we understand there has to mean more than just Moshe agreeing to live there. Otherwise, that doesn't really explain why Yisrael should be willing to have his daughter marry Moshe. But if we're saying that Moshe swore to stay there, then it makes sense. Yisrael is afraid that Moshe is going to return to Mitzrayim, and his daughter is going to be separated from him, and so forth, and therefore, once Moshe took the Shavua, then Yisrael is willing to have him marry his daughter. Marshall says that anyway, another way of understanding it is precisely because we said the word Vayomer Hashem Moshe Midyan Leich Shuv Mitzrayim. Why this word Leich? Why this word go? Hashem tells him in Midyan Shuv Mitzrayim. So Leich means, in other words, go back to Midyan, be Matur Neder over there in Yisrael's presence, and only then leave. So the very fact that it says Leich, that tells us in retrospect that the word Vayoyo Moshe means that he had sworn. So that's how we learn it. In fact, there is an explanation from some of the Mephoshim that we have to kind of repunctuate the words of the Pasuk. Like this, we have the Pasuk is Vayom Hashem Moshe B'Midyan. Hashem says to him in Midyan, Leich Shuv Mitzrayim, go and return to Mitzrayim. Some of the Mephoshim explain that you can also repunctuate the Pasuk. Vayom Hashem Moshe, Hashem tells Moshe, B'Midyan Leich, go to Midyan, Shuv Mitzrayim, and only then return to Mitzrayim. So again, why is he returning to Midian first in order to get Yisrael's permission to be Matur Neder? So Ve'en Ola El Shvur Dichtiv, and here is an example where we have the word Ola means a Shvur talking about Tzidkiyahu and Nebuchadnezzar. Now, there's many places in Tanakh where we have the word Ola. The Gemara could easily have brought a proof from any one of them. However, the Gemara wants to give an example over here of a historical case. Here we're saying that Moshe swore to Yisrael not to leave Midian without his permission. Here we have another example where Yid swore to a goy and he didn't follow the Allah, he broke it, and the results, as we're going to say, were catastrophic. So that's why the Gemara Davka brings in the story of Nebuchadnezzar and Tzidkiyahu. So the pasuk says Vayove Oseid ba'Allah. The pasuk says Nebuchadnezzar made Tzidkiyahu swear an Allah, a shvur. But then the pasuk says, "V'gamma Melech Nebuchadnezzar Marad," that Tzidkiyahu, who was the last king of Yehuda, rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar. Asher Ishbiyay Be'elikim, where Nebuchadnezzar had made him swear in Hashem's name. Now, in the simple sense, you would say, in other words, it makes it sound like just he broke his shvur, he rebelled. In other words, you would say, partially, you know, he had, when Nebuchadnezzar had first set him up as king, then he had sworn loyalty to Nebuchadnezzar, and now he broke his oath of loyalty and he went and revolted against him. But Maharsha says the reason why the Gemara does not accept that, the reason why the Gemara needs to tell us that it was a specific shvua, a personal matter between them, is because Tzidkiyahu, the Gemara tells us in a number of places, was a tzaddik. Now, the Pasuk portrays Tzidkiyahu as a rosha, but the Gemara explains in Shabbos and in other places that Tzidkiyahu on a personal level was a tzaddik. The problem is he wasn't moicha. The problem is his ministers and the people of his kingdom were mostly rishoyim, and he didn't have the strength and the moral courage to go and tell them off and tell them that they're doing wrong. We actually find in a number of places in Sefer Yirmiyah, we find a number of places where Yirmiyah has dealings with these ministers and whatnot, and they're harassing Yirmiyah and throwing him into a pit and so on and so forth. And Tzidkiyahu is very, very ineffective in being able to do anything against them. So he was a tzaddik, but he was basically in the wrong place at the wrong time. So now, therefore, Maharsha says, given that he was a tzaddik, though, we have to assume he wouldn't just blatantly go and violate a shvur. If he did, there must have been a good reason behind it, and that brings us to the story that the Gemara is going to tell you. So my meridusa, how did he rebel against Nebuchadnezzar? How did he break his shvur? What happened was, now, the Medrash gives background behind this. When Nebuchadnezzar appointed Tzidkiyahu as king of Yehuda, so what happened was, after Yoshiyahu, the king of Yehuda, had been killed in battle, after that you had a son of his, Yehoyachaz, who was king briefly, he was deposed, then Yehoyakim was king, and then Nebuchadnezzar, during his time, Nebuchadnezzar conquered Eretz Yisrael and made Yehoyakim his vassal. Yehoyakim was an out-and-out Russia, he rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar came with his army, and they dragged him out of Yerushalayim, and he died on the way. Yechoniah, his son, was set up as king. Yechoniah lasted only 3 months, and then Nebuchadnezzar came and took him into exile. That's the Golus Yechoniah that we have coming up in the Megillah, Shehoglam Yerushalayim Magola Im Yechoniah Melech Yehuda, and then he appointed Tzidkiyahu, an uncle of Yechoniah, as the next king of Yehuda. Now, as we said, Tzidkiyahu was a tzaddik, and Nebuchadnezzar also, he knows how to make use of Jewish brains. So he realized, first of all, Jews do keep their shavuos, so therefore, if Tzidkiyahu has sworn to be loyal to him, he will keep it. But second of all, also, he realized that he could use his talents to be an overlord over nearby Goyish kings. So the Pesukim mention in Yirmiyah, five nearby Goyish countries, Ammon, Moav, Tsur, I forget what the other two were, basically, Tzidkiyahu is going to be the overlord over them, and he in turn answers to Nebuchadnezzar. So you can have like a three level thing over there. Nebuchadnezzar has his empire, under him is Tzidkiyahu over Eretz Yehuda and the surrounding countries, and then you have those surrounding countries have their individual kings. So part of that was also that Tzidkiyahu was given free access to come to Nebuchadnezzar whenever he wants. So one time, Tzidkiyahu finds Nebuchadnezzar to ka'ochel al navta chaya, that he was eating a chaya rabbit. Now the Ran gives two explanations of the word chaya. It can mean raw, or it can mean alive. So one way or the other, it's a disgusting thing to do. Even, you know, Avram and Achai, after all, is also to Bnei Noach as well. Fine, they may not always be careful with it, but still, even they don't usually stoop so low. Nebuchadnezzar was doing it, in fact, because he wanted to develop the reason why, part of the reason why the Torah tells us not to eat Avram and Achai, and is that we shouldn't develop a cruel nature. He wanted to develop a cruel nature. He wanted to be this mean, rough, tough guy, and therefore he figured that this kind of thing is gonna bring to that. But he was also embarrassed to be caught out in it. So Omalei Nebuchadnezzar Letzitzkiyo is Shtabali Delei Maglis Alai. So Nebuchadnezzar says to Tzitzkiyahu, swear to me that you won't tell on me. Delei Titzeli Milsa, I don't want it to be a humiliation for me. If any of the other Goyish kings that I rule over find out about it, then people are going to say, why should we have such a low life as our emperor, as our king? Ishtabali, so Tzitzkiyahu swore accordingly to Nebuchadnezzar. But later on, Tzidkiyahu was very, very bothered by it. It was constantly bothering him that he has the secret in his hand that he could tell, among others, he could tell the Goyish kings who are under him, for example, and they could altogether mount a revolt against Nebuchadnezzar. And he can't tell it because of the Shavuot. So he went to be Matir Nedir. He went to the Sanhedrin to ask to be Matir the Shavua, the Galilei, and then he went and then revealed the secret. Now, what were the Chachamim thinking to be Matir his Nedir, given that we just said that you're Ein Matir and Lo El Bafanav? Some of Hoshim talk about a couple of possibilities. One of them being that because Tzidkiyo was having such tsar, and therefore it's preventing him, he's not able to focus on learning Torah, he's not able to focus on his other duties as a king, so therefore they figured it may be a dry mitzvah to do that. Another point some of the Mephoshim make is, after all, Tzidkiyahu himself is a king, and in general, when a king tells you to do something, unless it's blatantly against the Torah, then you listen to what he what he says. So for those reasons, they were mocked to the Neder. Marsha actually brings in another point as well, actually, that now the Gemara tells us in Yuma and in Avodah Zarah a story where one time, we had it in Ein Yaakov some time back, where in Yuma, that one time Rabbi Yochanan went to a certain Goyish lady to get from her a remedy for a certain disease called Safdina. So she tells him the remedy. She tells him, before I tell it to you, she says, I want you to swear that you won't tell it to anybody else. It's my professional secret. I want to be able to continue making money from it. So he tells her, L'elakod Yisrael loy maglina. To the God of Yisrael, I will not tell it. Now, on the face of it, that sounds like a shrua that I'm swearing by Hashem. So she told it. Afterwards, though, he tells her, you know what? You misunderstood what I said. I said, L'elakod Yisrael. I'm not going to tell it to Hashem, but I never said I'm not going to tell it to anybody else. We learned over there, Marsha had brought what exactly happened after that. One opinion is that she was so upset about it that she committed suicide. The other is that she actually was so impressed by it that he wants to give this out for free. I'm like, she's been making money from it all the time that she became a giyuris. Be that as it may, the point is, Marsha says, in a similar thing over here, Tzidkiyahu may have tried using the same trick. The difference is that Rabbi Yochanan tells it to her after she tells him the secret, before he goes and reveals it to anybody else. As opposed to over here, Tzidkiyahu did not do that, so therefore it made a chil Hashem. So in other words, if after Nebuchadnezzar had told him to swear, if he had said the same kind of thing, and then he had said before he left, you know, haha, Nebuchadnezzar, I got you, I am going to tell it, then it wouldn't make a chil Hashem. He himself might have been in trouble, but anyway, whatever. Instead he didn't. Instead he went and was Matir Neder without Nebuchadnezzar's permission, and then he's going to try to use this excuse, but it's not really going to wash. Anyway, so he told it. So word got around. Shomer Nebuchadnezzar to come and vazim le'rav Ravanoi. Nebuchadnezzar eventually finds out that his own ministers are mocking him for this. So he realizes that Tzidkiyahu had spilled the beans. Sholach va'aisi Sanhedrin vit Tzidkiyahu. So Nebuchadnezzar sent word to have the Sanhedrin and Tzidkiyahu brought before him to face justice. Omalahu, he says to them, Chazitun mai ovid Tzidkiyahu. So he starts by, the Sanhedrin are supposed to be, they're like the Congress, the Parliament or something of the Jewish people. So first he's going to accuse Tzidkiyahu in their presence. So he says to them, you see what Tzidkiyahu did? Lav hochi havadei shtabas b'shma d'shmayad le'magos. And isn't it true that you swore in Hashem's name that you're not going to tell? Omalei, Sifio says, it's Shilas, Ashvo Soy. Well, I was Matur Neder. I asked to be Matur Neder. Omalahoin, so Nuhamnetzer asks the Chachamim, is that true? Michalin al Shavuasa? Is it in fact possible, according to your laws, to ask to be Matur Neder? Omrulayin. So they said yes. The Medrash actually gives more detail about it. Medrash says that when Nebuchadnezzar first summoned the Sanhedrin, he realized they're important people. He realized you don't just treat them stam like commoners. So he had them sit on choshevet chairs, and he's having them go through the basics of Torah with him to explain to him certain basics of what he needs to know if he's going to be ruling over Jews. And eventually they got to this point of Ataras Nedarim. And they explained to him, yes, there is a concept of Ataras Nedarim. Well, when a person makes a shavuah that impinges on somebody else, can he be matirit only in the person's presence or even not in his presence? So the Sanhedrin said, only in his presence. So the Nochanetzah said to them, well, then what did you think you were doing, that you were matirit Tzidkiyahu's neder, his shavuah, without me being present or without me even knowing about it? My time, I'm written with Tzidkiyahu. Why did you not tell Tzidkiyahu that you can't do it? Because that's your halacha. Miyad, so therefore you have right away, it's described in the Pasuk in Eicha, Yeshu l'oret yidmu ziknei bas Tzion. They sat on the ground and they were silent, the elders of Tzion, meaning like they had nothing to answer to Nebuchadnezzar. He had a valid point. They had no counter argument. In fact, Maharal Shah says, you think about it, that's why, if the Pasuk is just describing what happened, that at the time of the Churban they were sitting stunned on the ground, then the expression shouldn't be Yeshvu in future tense, and yidmu, it should be in past tense. Yoshvu la'aretz domu ziknei batzion. Yeshvu is not only in future tense, and Yeshvu and Yidmu is not only future tense. It's in what's called in English the imperative tense. Do this. Yeshvu, you should sit. Yidmu, they should sit. Yidmu, they should be silent. So this is, in other words, the Pasuk in effect is quoting Nebuchadnezzar what he said to them. You, the Chachamim, should now sit on the ground. You're not going to sit on those honorable chairs anymore because you violated your own halacha and you allowed Sifio to be matir as neder. They took out the pillows from underneath them. Here they've been sitting on fancy chairs with pillows, and now he ordered the pillows taken out from under them in token of the fact that they had behaved wrongly. In fact, the Medrash goes even further, that he had them tied to the tails of his horses and dragged all over the streets. Now, the interesting question is then that the Ran deals here with the question, well, we're saying you're not supposed to be Matur the Neder Ela Bafono. What happens if they were Matur the Neder? Is it a valid Hatorah B'dieved? So the Ran brings from different Rishonim who argue about that. Some say that, yes, after all, you're not supposed to do it. But nevertheless, if he did, it is a valid Hatorah. And therefore, in other words, so now when Sifkiyahu went and told to the other kings and so forth, he was allowed to Api Alocha, just it was a bad idea to do it as we see the effect that it had. But then the Ran brings from the Raivad that, no, fakir, you look over here, you look how the Pasuk is complaining, Kosiv Tseveach is the expression he uses, the Pasuk is protesting about what Sifkiyahu did. He broke his to Nebuchadnezzar, and was saying, look what happened, look at this catastrophe that happened from it. So therefore, no, we should say that even Bidiyevid, they were matter, then it shouldn't be considered a valid Hatara. So we see from that it has to be done before now, and we see what happened from Tzidkiyahu not paying attention to that. So the Gemara continues, the Mishnah continues, actually. Va'oid Omer Rameir. Rameir says further, let's talk about more of this matter of Ataras Nedarim, of valid methods that we can use. We can use as a valid Pesach for a neder this that it says in the Torah. We can tell the person who made a neder, Ilu Hayisi Yedea, Shapta Over Al, Loisikim Baal Loisiter. Consider, if you make this neder, did you realize when you made this neder that you might be over on Isurim such as Loisikim and Loisiter, that you're going to take revenge or you're going to carry a grudge? For example, the Rosh gives an example. Let's say, for example, You made a neder that you're not going to lend him any of your kalim. Now, in fact, a Gemara in Yuma, when it talks about these dinim of loisikim veloisiter, gives exactly that kind of example. One time, Reuven comes to Shimon and says, lend me this tool of yours, and Shimon says no, and later on, Shimon needs to borrow that tool or a different tool from Reuven, and he says, can I borrow it? And Reuven says, no, you didn't want to lend me, so I'm not lending you. So now we tell this person, did you realize that you're making this neder not to lend him kalim? That may very well be because you're being over on loisikim or loisiter, that you're carrying a grudge. Sure, I'll lend you. I'll be a nice guy, not like you were and you didn't want to lend me. So did you realize that? Did you realize that you're going to be maybe over on the mitzvah not to hate a fellow Yid in your heart? And that you should love a fellow Yid like yourself. Now, the chidush of all of this, the Ran explains, is like this. Udiu in the Masechta, the Gemara had explained that there are certain things that we cannot use as a Pesach. For example, there are psukim that say that a person who makes a neder deserves to be stabbed with a sword. And then the remedy for that is that the Chachamim can help him be matur neder. Or, for example, you have the expression, we had this earlier, and then when we learned in Yaakov earlier in the Masechta, that, for example, the expression that when a person makes a neder is like building a bama, and then fulfilling it is like bringing a korban on it. Now, we said, the Gemara had said, that even though there are some Chachamim who hold you can use those as a valid Pesach for a neder, the halacha is that you cannot. And the reason is because your average Yid, when he's faced with such a thing, He may pretend as though, you know what, I am takasari, I made the neder, and therefore I didn't take that into consideration, because what Yid is going to openly say, you know what, I don't care that it's a chutzpah against Hashem, I don't care that it's whatever, your average Yid is not going to say that. So therefore he might be pretending that he really sincerely regrets the neder, because of that, where really he doesn't. Mashenkin, when it comes to therefore, the Ran says that's the chiddush of our Mishnah. Here we're talking about things, these are mitzvahs as well. Nevertheless, people don't always consider these to be such serious mitzvahs. Okay, so I did nakama, okay, so I did natira. Your average Yid is likely to think to himself, big deal, how bad can it be already? So therefore, if he takas sincerely, so therefore, when we point these things out to him, if he says, you know what, that's true, I would not have made the neder if I considered that, then we can consider that it really is more sincere. Because he could equally well have said, you know what, I don't care about that. So the fact that he does say a care shows that he's more sincere. So all these things we can point out. We point out to him another example is you have the mitzvah that your fellow Yid should live together with you, which means that you have to give tzedakah, you have to help him out. The fact is, he might be poor, he might be poor now, he might become poor later, and you, because of your neder, you won't be able to help him out. Now, Udiu in the Masechta does talk about certain loopholes that you can use. You can put food on a rock, for example, and declare it hefker, and then let the guy take it, but it's hard to do workarounds like that. So we tell him, do you realize that it's preventing you from doing a number of different mitzvahs? Omar, and then if he says, Ilu Hayisi Adeshu came, Moya Hayisi Neder, if I had realized that, I would not have made the neder. Havez a mutter. Now, as a result of that, the neder can be mutter. Those are valid psachim for a neder. And if we find, therefore, and therefore that's those are good reasons then to use as a basis for being matter the neder. Yom Yom Mashiach Ogola. I don't think we'll do it like Hayom Yom necessarily and do the ones for Adar Aleph and Adar Beis, but we'll see. Meanwhile, let's start with Beis Adar Aleph anyway. One of the tzaddikim, one of the Polish tzaddikim, Darshan on the Pesuk, Oz Yom Uvagoyim, Higdol Hashem Lasis Eila, Lasisim Eila, Higdol Hashem Lasis Imano, you smeich him, that Oz, when Mashiach comes, Yom Uvagoyim, they'll say among the nations, Higdol Hashem Lasis Imela, look at these tremendous, amazing things Hashem has done for the Jewish people, and will answer them indeed. Higdol Hashem Lasis Imano, Hashem has done tremendous things for us. Why? Because Hayinu Smeichim in the schos of the simcha that we had. We'll try to do the one for other bays as well. We're getting close to the time before Geula. Every Yid should get accustomed to Geula and put himself in a mindset of Geula. That means, in other words, a person transforms his individual day into a day of individual Geula and turns his individual place into Eretz Yisrael, Machta Eretz Yisrael. And he does that by doing his avodah right now in this place as perfect as possible in machshava dibra ma'isa, and therefore it's a geula dika type of avodah. We were learning halachas about eder vechaseres. So far we talked about cases when you need an eder chaseres and when you don't, and when if people don't join in with it, then you have a problem. The actual Eruv that we're making, now we're not talking about the Eruv as in the poles and wires. I like to say, you know, you have the same way as with a computer, you have hardware and software. The same way, you know, with an Eruv, you have the hardware, which is the poles and wires or walls and whatnot, and then you have the software, so to speak, which is the bread or the shared food that makes it work. So,
those kinds of
you take on Erev Shabbos one loaf of bread. It can even be the Alter Rebbe adds, it can be rice bread or lentil bread or whatever. So he takes a loaf of bread of his own. Nowadays people often use matzah for the purpose, because that way they can keep it for a long time. You mizak it through somebody else to everybody who lives in the chaser. Meaning you tell somebody else, take this loaf of bread or this piece of matzah or whatever, and be zoiche in it on behalf of all the Jews who live in this chotzer or these chatzeres. So say, for example, let's say, you know, you have a typical arrangement here in Crown Heights. You have a duplex, you have an upstairs and a downstairs, and then you have across the alley, you have another house like that. So you share the alley with them. So you're going to say, for example, this matzah, I'm giving it to you to be zoiche in it on behalf of also of my downstairs neighbors and my neighbors across the alley, that kind of thing. Then you take back the bread, you lift it up a tefach, and the other person lifts it up a tefach first so that he's zoicha in it. Then he gives it back to you. You make the bracha, and you say the paragraph that you have in the siddur, that with this eruv we'll be able to carry in and out of the houses and to the chotzer and then vice versa for everybody who lives in everybody in this chotzer. And the Alter Rebbe adds, you should also be adding in this chia everybody who's going to move in later on, anybody who's going to move in, as long as this eruv is valid. Generally, you make it from year to year. So have in mind also when you're being mezakeh, it's not just to anybody who lives in these apartments right now, but also anybody who's going to be moving in during the coming year. And then it's in somebody's house, kind of beginning of Shabbos. So then it's considered, and you have it's in a room that's at least 4x4 amos. So now it's considered as though everybody lives in that house, in that room, and that's what makes it, that's so to speak, the software that makes it work, that now everybody's allowed to carry freely between the houses and the chotzer and the stairwell and the front yard and the backyard and all that.